You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to talk about the offense from that Week 13 loss to the Steelers, late game on Sunday. Here to talk about it with me, Vas Larikos of Baltimore Beatdown. Vas, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Ken. Thanks for having me. Unfortunately, after a loss.
Yeah, always a bummer. Obviously, divisional loss, a big one. This has playoff implications in a lot of different ways, you know, in terms of tiebreakers with teams like the Bengals, with potentially, standings position with the Steelers, though it won't be a tiebreaker in all likelihood with them. What's your take right now on their chance to make the playoffs?
I think they still have a strong chance to make the playoffs. According to 538, 83% as it stands today. However, maybe more importantly than the loss of the game was the loss of Marlon Humphrey. I think that does limit their ceiling potentially of how far they can go in January. When you think about it, Ronnie Stanley, Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey, three or five best players on injured reserve.
Yeah, certainly a lot of the salary cap devoted to that injured reserve list. I'm upset certainly about the Humphrey injury. It's an enormous loss. Almost nobody could be bigger on the team. But Patrick McCary was the only good tackle they had this year, and he's the only guy who's played it at all well. He's again gone for at least several weeks. At least is the word I got today. So, another big loss, and potentially, also with Phillips, the guy who's coming in behind him, it could look like that is even a bigger injury than the Humphrey injury.
Sure, sure. McCarrie's been scrappy. He's been fighting. Apparently, it was a hand injury. I think you have to imagine some kind of fracture probably. Obviously, you don't want to speculate on that. But to have an offensive lineman leave the game, it's most likely something significant that's going to cost a couple weeks.
Yeah, I agree. It's you know, they're like hockey players a lot of the time, but there's at least got to be some sort of very painful damage to the hand, I would think, or he would be back out there. All right, let's jump right into the Ravens' scheme in this one. A few differences. I want to talk about some of the same things again, but one thing interesting about this game they didn't do in previous weeks, or not very often anyway, is they didn't have a running back at all on 7 plays in this game. So kind of a new wrinkle for the offense. They're still trying to keep it fresh.
Yes, Greg Roman was talking about going into the vault before the game. I noticed they used Devin Duvernay on orbit motion quite a bit, and certainly a whole lot of pre-snap motion as been accustomed to in this offense. You would think if they had some grand scheme to unveil, they wouldn't be holding on to it for too much longer, but they did make some changes here.
Yeah, obviously this would have been a game to bring out the scheme and try and win the ball game. Some of these things, obviously, with Roman, he's trying to show them one more thing. So in the last 4 weeks, when they look at the advanced scouting, they're going to see things and say, hey, the Ravens are doing this now. You got to watch for orbit motion and know how to defend that. And that gives them one more thing to work on. But they did a good job with that, I thought. Some of the times they had it back in the game, when they had Freeman, they floated him out very early over that right sideline to give Lamar an early target rather than having to wait for the normal time for that swing pass to develop. More like Freeman's going to know and Mar's going to be able to see where that ball is going right out of his hand.
Yeah, sprinted out to his alignment. And that's really what these blitz beaters, they need to be. You know, they need to give him underneath targets so that he has somewhere to go with the ball.
Yeah, looked pretty good on that. I mean, I think that Freeman showed some positive signs in this game as a runner, as a receiver, certainly. I thought Latavius Murray, he's got nothing left as a runner, and I think the Ravens have finally figured that out. He might have had a carry in this game, might have even had 2 carries in this game for 1 yard or something.
Exactly.
But they're done with him as a runner. I think we can say that's the case now. But to have him have 2 plays as a receiver now opens up a new option for his use.
Yes, and both were almost chunk plays, picked up first down on both receptions. That was very good to see the backs involved. Nate McCrary was activated in lieu of Tyson Williams. I think he had 2 or 3 snaps. They really did stick with Freeman. Freeman had the lion's share of the work in this game.
Yeah, McCrary just one carry, his first in the NFL for -1 yard. So hopefully it doesn't end there. But yeah, most of the running, certainly 14 of the 17 running back carries were Freeman. One thing I've been talking about week to week is the number of inline players they've been using, because it's been growing and growing, and it's really been restricting the amount of receiver usage they had. So 2 things that improved the amount of total receiver snaps in this game. One was the fact they have 7 plays with no running backs. So that gives them 7 additional wide receivers, if you want to think about it that way. And the other is that they were down to 1.64 inline eligibles per play, meaning tight ends, fullbacks, and 6 offensive linemen. They didn't have any 6 offensive linemen in this game. But those are the 3 groups I would consider for it. Tight end snaps were down generally. Nick Boyle's absence played a role in that.
Absolutely. Boyle, I still ailing from that tough knee injury, and he was deactivated for this game. Obviously, Tomlinson filled in, but he did not have a tremendous amount of snaps. Reichard at 51% of snaps. A little bit surprised by that, but again, I think Roman is experimenting with different things. What can get this offense clicking?
Right. Now, surprise high, surprise low with the Ricard.
I'm surprised that it wasn't higher, considering the front they were facing.
Yeah, I agree. And I you know, they used him oftentimes as a lone running back, or occasionally as a lone running back when they really had no running back in the game. He was running more patterns into the secondary at, you know, kind of normal depth. It's not all just all the Bonte Leach 3-yard out route pattern. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of patterns over the middle of the field looking for the football. Now, Lamar doesn't seem to look for him, but that's which is another matter. But he's running patterns in some sweet spots on the field.
Yes, I think the one really egregious sack that Lamar took, he had Reichard wide open and just didn't look for him. But I think we'll get into that in the later section. Reichard, I think I would like to see him featured a little bit more, especially in a game, rivalry game, where you want a tone setter sometimes.
Right. Now, it was reported that, I mean, I've seen it reported all the time, some crazy stuff about how the Steelers are always playing cover zero and this and that. They did not come with a lot of 6- and 7-man pressure in this game. In fact, looking at my score sheet right now, they had 1-7 and 1-6. Now, make it 2 sixes in this game. Might be short one more. Okay, make it 3-2. That's not nothing. But it's, you know, when you pass the ball 44 times or drop back 44 times, you expect to get some such pressures. They mostly still rushed 4 in this game. And when they did rush 4, the Ravens got free releases across, because it's one of the things that the running back typically reacts to a 4-man pass rush after he sees that it's happening with an automatic free release. And they, the Ravens are not using the same number of set and chip blockers, was the point I was making out of this.
No, I definitely noticed that for sure. I thought Butler, the Steelers defensive coordinator, mixed up his calls pretty well. He had some nice deceptive blitzes, and he was sending the slot blitz on quite a few occasions. And then later on towards the third quarter, fourth quarter, Lamar finally figured out how to defeat that. But he was under a pretty good amount of pressure for most of the game, I thought.
Yeah, a lot of zone blitzes. So they were still trying to get overloads with a 4-man rush, or to give T.J. Watt a 1-on-1 opportunity if they or a slot blitz, an unimpeded opportunity if they tried to deal with that. So they were trying to get opportunities. It's not like they weren't trying to be deceptive about it. They were. They did simulated pressure. They did blitzes from off ball, as part of these zone blitzes, and they dropped plenty of people from the line of scrimmage. Just in terms of numbers, they really didn't rush extraordinary numbers in this game.
Sure, and that's not a good sign when they're not sending extraordinary numbers, and they're still seems had to have Lamar on duress for majority of the game.
Yeah. Totally 22 set and chip blockers, 13 sets and 9 chips, so only half a set/chip blocker per play. That's really much lower than recently. We've been up to as high as 1.06 in recent weeks. So they've committed a lot more of their receiving assets to pass blocking in past weeks than they did against the Steelers.
And I noticed Tomlinson, they put him in the slot on a couple plays. I don't think that was too effective, but it was something that caught my eye, just because you really expect to, at least from what we've seen in other games, to keep more guys in.
Yeah, I mean, Tomlinson's certainly a guy they almost always keep in, and he definitely ran a couple of patterns, at least in this last game. Didn't have a particularly great game, but had a couple penalties, one for a false start, and then he might have been part of an illegal shift where he was one of two players moving. He didn't move much, by the way, but they got him for it, and I think he was the one who shouldn't have been moving.
He lost the edge a couple times against Watt, too, I noticed. Not one of his better games, for sure.
Right. Let's talk about run action a little bit, because that's been a big part of what the Ravens have been doing really since Roman got here. But pulling regardless of the play type, whether it's a pass or a run, pulling a guard is something they do a lot. And they kind of cut that down to 17 times on 69 plays this last week. And they were at like 19 of 76 last week. So it's not like it's changed a whole lot. It's about the same percentage-wise, but it's a little bit lower than I think of being optimal for the Ravens. And part of that, of course, is not able to really get the running game going. The other part of it in 2021, unfortunately, is no one really fears the Ravens run game anymore. It's really not only limited that, but it's limited the value of Lamar.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. Another factor, the guards were having a little trouble executing their pulls.
Yeah,
I think they resulted in, I know Zeitler missed at least one or two. Powers hit, he had a couple ones that he executed well, but also a few that didn't work out. And a lot of times those plays result in tackle for loss.
Yeah, they one of Powers' pulls, and this is really each of them had a play like this where they tried to pull to the opposite side and were just a step too slow to get to the defender who was quick off the ball. Mm-hmm. And in one case, it led to a quarterback hit, and that was given up by Powers against Watt being a step too slow. And Zeitler also gave up a similar play, but it was only a half a penetration in his case. So obviously not ideal situations on either side there at guard from a pulling perspective. What do I want to talk about otherwise? You know, I want to go back to the blitz for a second, because there's a point I really wanted to make and I forgot to make it. And that is that I think more of what's happening with the pass rush in this game, more of the pressure that was caused, was really about individual failures. It's about the inability to block Highsmith and Watt on the edge, to a lesser extent, the inability to block Hayward. Wormley, they had some trouble blocking him, but a lot of his pressure was, frankly, cleanup stuff among his 2.5 sacks. But, you know, it's not like those guys aren't a difficult set of opponents. And Highsmith, in particular, looks scary as heck to me right now with his spin move. But the Ravens are very limited in terms of what they can do offensively if you can't ever count on winning a one-on-one matchup on the edge.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the big problem is the tackles, I think. It's reminiscent of the Buffalo Bills playoff game in my mind. And when they, especially when they send numbers and your tackles can't win one-on-one and then you're trying to block extra man, it just derails the offense completely.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you get one into the backfield and that's the only one, Lamar can often avoid him, move the pocket, roll out, find an opening, get into level two, get you a nice run play. But when two are in the backfield free at the same time, that's usually the end of that. And Lamar had a lot of that tonight. And, you know, a lot of these cases where he got flushed, I didn't feel like he really had a good chance to unload the ball. Mm-hmm. Like it was the pressure was there too quickly. There wasn't enough room to move around for him to find a spot to overthrow to the sideline. I mean, all of the things about getting the ball up would have been too dangerous in that situation in terms of risking the fumble.
I think Lamar played better than I thought the second time through. There's just not a lot you can do. I mean, he's Houdini back there, but when there's guys all over you, and Villanova was getting bowled on almost every pass play, and there's not an outlet valve on a lot of plays, he put the ball in guys' hands a lot of times when he could, and they didn't come down with it.
Yeah, I think it's a good segue. So let's move on to Lamar while we're there. He had 14 ample time and space opportunities out of 44 plays. That's 32%. And by the way, that's about normal. That's not high. It's not low. It's about what he should get. He did a lousy job with his ample time and space opportunities. He averaged 6.1 yards per pass. That's not as bad as it was last week when he had some ridiculously low number, much lower than that. It might have been a yard and a half or 2 yards per play. But it's still bad. He should be averaging about 10 yards per play on those easy pitch and catch, take your time, eat a sandwich in the pocket plays. But then on his other throws, he had 30 other plays that only went for 134 net yards, and that includes 6 of the 7 sacks. One of them was with ample time and space. That's 4.5 yards a pass. That's not acceptable either. So it's not any one thing that's really holding the Ravens back. The offensive line is not holding up their end of the bargain. There's no doubt about that. But Lamar, relative to the time he's given, is not doing a good job with his opportunities either.
Agreed. He was inaccurate for a lot of the second half. Balls were low, balls were sailing. Also, I counted 7 balls that touched receivers' hands that they didn't bring in.
Ooh.
So not all of them are perfect throws, but you expect maybe a few more of those to be reeled in. So it was just they're just so out of sync. They're just so out of sync. They're not clicking. They're not in rhythm. I wonder if tempo would help. I know we have a question about that later, because when they went with tempo, those were their best drives.
Yeah, obviously when they needed to at the end of the game, they marched right down the field. And you know, one of my issues with going to overtime is that they wouldn't have had that to support them in overtime.
Right.
You know, it wouldn't have been there. They'd again had a clock management situation where they'd been aware of trying to run it out, but probably not in any kind of hurry up mode. It's unfortunate. You know, this defense was really overworked in that fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. There wasn't an opportunity, in my opinion, after you get out snap 23-8 in a 3-drive series, to go up tempo in the middle of that somewhere to try and get your offense turned around. It's just, Campbell was on the field every single freaking play. Mm-hmm. I mean, Williams was on the field almost every play. I mean, those are your guys who are supposed to be playing rotationally. They played great, but you know, they couldn't have been right at the end of that game. And that's, of course, when Pittsburgh scored 17 points on three drives. Reminds me a lot of that 2016 game that eliminated the Ravens on Christmas night. When they ended up with the Juszczyk not kneeling at the 1 yard line, and the thing I've beefed about for years, but it was very frustrating. Similarly, in that the fourth quarter, the Ravens allowed a couple 75-yard drives that night and 15 yards per play on those. These drives were shorter, dinkier, and dunkier stuff, but it was still basically the Ravens could not stop the Pittsburgh Steelers mostly on first down because they got six plays where they got to second and two or less. And they only once got to third and five or more. So, you know, sure. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, they dominated time of possession overall. I think it was 13 minutes, but not in crunch time. That's when the script flipped, and it just it's very frustrating. Frustrating when you see Lamar under pressure, and then you see Roethlisberger firing the ball out in 2 seconds. And it just, I think they need to make some tweaks and they need the players to perform better. It's just, as you said, it's a confluence of a lot of different factors working together.
The Ravens don't really run much out of bunch formation to try and get picks and rubs the way the Steelers did. But when we looked at the defense last night, I mean, that was the thing that just stuck out time after time is the Ravens are rubbing the Steelers cornerbacks off route after route. They're setting picks like they did on the on the touchdown that put them ahead. Averett's play where he lost for the 29-yard touchdown earlier. It was a 40 and then a 29-yard play back-to-back. But the second one, I mean, he basically got lost on what effectively was a rub route because the Steelers, the route combination with Humphrey and Averett not paying the kind of attention they needed to it caused them to run into the same area and kind of get in each other's way a little bit. And that was all it took for Averett to be, you know, lost far over the middle. So,
right.
Yeah. I want to get back to Lamar for 1 second. There's one more thing I want to say is what does Lamar do this offseason? And obviously, he's done a great job of working with Josh Harris and working with even other mentors, I think, at this point to try and figure out what needs to be fixed. Most of that's going to be mechanically about this game, but I think this has to be a combination of scheme and mechanics this year because they're going to need additional scheme. And I think I'm really getting to the Ravens need to establish a set of bunch formation plays that they can screw up the opponent's blitz. I think that's basically what the Ravens need. They see the other teams going to the blitz. You got to be audible in a bunch formation and be facile, picking and rubbing off that, not get an offensive pass interference called and get some easy completions off that. Because that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers have been able to do. And it seems to work. The Ravens, you know, undoubtedly with the type of receivers they have, you have a combination of big bodies and small bodies. That's a good combination for pick routes. You like that? I mean, maybe everybody big would even be better for pick routes. But when you have a couple tight ends in the mix, you can give the opponent nightmares under that circumstance. And I just think it's going to take a lot of different people doing their jobs this offseason to make this right.
I could not agree more. Great point, spot on. I really think they should have probably focused on it again, going back to last year in that game in Buffalo, because it wasn't dissimilar necessarily. Lamar overall, he's regressed in some ways. He's making some bad decisions he didn't used to make. That interception was awful, especially in field goal range, especially when you're in four down territory. Just there's no need to do that. Doing a little bit too much. And he's taken a lot of hits this year, I've noticed.
Right.
We used to say, look, he doesn't take hits. He's so good at evading hits. He takes a lot more hits than he used to. So he needs to get back to some of that, where he used to be a year and a half ago.
Well, in 2019, since they were running out of pistol, he's the outside threat. And that sends him to the sideline where he's the sideline is his friend, 7 yards and out of bounds, 8 yards and out of bounds. He can do that over and over and over again. And he had a huge percentage of his plays where he basically didn't even get touched in 2019. In 2020, they switched and they went to mostly sidecar instead of mostly pistol. That makes him the middle threat. and one of your backs from sidecar has to be your outside speed threat. This year, it's worse. They're still at a sidecar, and they don't have any speed to get to the outside.
Right.
So that those guys in the center are even more keyed in on Lamar, and I think that's what's leading to some of what you're seeing here is that, you know, the defense is just much more keyed on Lamar, and they're able to this year because the supporting cast is so weak on offense.
Yeah, yeah. And Lamar did have some good balls here. I mean, I think the seam shot to Andrews to set up the Freeman touchdown was a beautiful throw. I thought the touchdown to Watkins was a beautiful throw. Mm-hmm. But it's just not consistent, and there's too much on his plate, and he's not playing at MVP level right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think we can say that fairly indeed. Let's move on and talk some offensive line here because I have a few things I want to say about this. One of the things is that, you know, seven sacks, and the previous week, Lamar was responsible for a lot of what happened in terms of trying to turn a pressure into a run rather than a pressure into an incomplete. And that's okay if he's making good judgments about, you know, getting some of those and occasionally hitting on a 10 or 15 yard run and then taking a 2 or 3 yard sack. I got no problem. Lamar's good at generally making that exchange. This week, that really wasn't the case. Lamar was running for his life. He was in trouble in the pocket and not able to get the ball off. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these sacks ended up getting charged to the offensive line. In fact, there's 42 points on these sacks that got charged, and 28 and a half of them I had going to the offensive line, which is kind of high because it does not usually end up being that the offensive line in a whole season even gets half of the total sacks charge. Usually it's free runners, it's the quarterback holding the ball too long on an ample time and space play. It's a variety of other circumstances that go with that. Villanueva completely outmatched by Alex Highsmith. It looks like a real long-term problem. I think I mentioned this earlier, but his spin move, devastating spin move. And that wasn't even where he got most of his trouble. He bowled Villanueva very easily.
Yeah, Villanueva's anchor was a major problem in this game. Highsmith was a project out of Charlotte, I think second year, and he looks like he might be an upgrade over Dupree at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, certainly at the price, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's a player. One thing you notice from Villanueva technique-wise, and he's still trying to mirror, but he had a couple plays where Highsmith got him off balance. He crossed his feet. And as soon as that happens, you're likely to go down as an mm-hmm. offensive lineman. But he had for sure one play early. I don't want to ascribe it like it was three because I saw one, but I think I might have seen two.
I saw two.
Okay, so that's good. I really hate to see that happen. And you know, once technique things like that creep in, you know, 30-year-old lineman or whatever Villanueva is right now, I mean, you're an older guy, he's not looking to learn the position at this point. That's bad. Two holding flags. The first one, I think everybody agrees, was ticky-tack. Certainly Romo said, well, that's not a flag, you know, kind of thing. And the second one, though, he gave up the sack anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he didn't get charged for that holding penalty, but I did charge him for one holding penalty in my system. And without the holding flag, he'd have probably been a high F by my scoring, adding 6 points to him. But he gave up 1.75 sacks. That's parts of three sacks, one full one, one half, and one quarter. And five pressures, which breaks down as four fulls and two halves. So they were basically in Lamar's lap all freaking night against him. You can call it a mulligan or whatever. He's used his mulligan this year. So, you know.
Yeah, he's, you know, they were expecting a stable veteran presence. And, you know, that's what happens sometimes with the third contract guys. Sometimes you hit and sometimes you realize the team that moved on for them made a good decision there too.
So he's, I think the Ravens have him next year at $6 million, if I recall correctly. It's like 2 years, $16 million, but 10 of it was guaranteed. So $6 million is the option for 2022. Do you think there's any chance the Ravens pick that up at this point?
I mean, depends on Stanley, depends on Juwan James. But I think that's a lot of money for his performance this year.
Right. That's where I am too. I mean, you know, unfortunately, right now, if they lost Villanueva, it'd probably be about the biggest loss they could have on the team, and that's a terrible thing. Oh, my God, is that a terrible thing. I mean, you know, they have no one else to play tackle. They're really now trying to figure out, who do we have on this roster we're going to stick at tackle and make it work, even though we don't have anyone. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah. Let's do that later.
All right. So Powers is next. A long game has covered some sins for Powers, and this happened a couple times recently. We had three pressures, a quarterback hit, and a false start. Seems like kind of a lot to give up, and it's a 69-snap game. One of the things that was not good is he didn't really do all that well on pulls. But on the other hand, I kind of can give him a little bit of a pass on being too slow to block T.J. Watt, who's, lightning quick off the snap, of course, on a pull to try and avoid that quarterback hit. So, well, it's a quarterback hit. It was a tough charge on him. And I realized that's the kind of thing that cost him 4 points out of his pulling score, where he had 4 out of 10 points, and he would have had 8 out of 10 if he'd been able to make that block. Or if he just missed it, he would have made 7 out of 10, obviously. So Powers, I think, honestly, has played a lot better than most people in the Baltimore area give him credit for. If you look at the PFF standings for the whole year for his play, it's been pretty good. That's the way I've scored it. It's basically, I've only had him for a couple of bad games the whole year. This was a C-. It was one of his worst games. I'll go to my chart right now. I'll tell you how many there have been worse than this year. But it hasn't been much. And, yeah, Powers is only – this was actually Powers' worst game of the year, this C-minus here. So –
that's pretty good. I thought he had a tough game a few games back. I don't quite recall. I think he gave up 2 sacks in one game. But I noticed one play, the defensive lineman crossed his face. Lamar was able to hit, so I think it was either Hollywood or DuVernay on a slant, and it didn't turn out too bad. I think Powers is a C-level player. I don't think he's a D or an F-level player. I've been saying that since last year. And he's not a guy that you want to make the anchor of your line, but when you look around the entire league, you could do worse than Powers.
Yeah, you could do a lot worse. And you're right. The Minnesota game is the game you're thinking of. The thing that saved him that, and he did give up 1.1 2/3 sacks, so I'm giving out the partials there, and one quarterback hit in that game. But that game is also 89 snaps. Mm-hmm. So that's a case of the length of the game really kind of bailing him out in a rate statistic. So. Mm-hmm. As it should, pass blocking is a great game.
Yeah.
All right. Move on to Bozeman.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He scored the best for me of any of the linemen. Now, he had a fairly easy matchup, probably the easiest of the group, because a lot of his snaps were trying to block that nose tackle who came off the practice squad, Montrevious Adams. And not that Adams is. Yeah. He had a pass defense in the game. But he only allowed half a pressure in the game. And I think if you look at other services, in particular, if you look at PFF, and I don't know how they grade Bozeman exactly in this game, but if they have him lower, which I expect they would, it'd be because of his pass blocking score is reduced by some bad snaps. And I've not charged him for that in my system. So he's an A prior to adjustment for me. I had him only for, let me make sure I've got this right. 3 missed blocks in the game and 1/2 of a pressure. So that's not a whole lot of negative, and that's obviously led the A game here.
I think Bozeman is a very solid center, great center. I'd like to keep him in Baltimore for a while. I noticed one of Wormley's cleanups. He was in position to, as they say, looking for work to try to help out, and he couldn't quite get there. So.
Yeah.
That would have been obviously a great if he could. He could not, but he's been the anchor of the group along with Zeiler. But I know Zeiler didn't have his best game this time.
No, it wasn't Zeiler's best game. He had not had a trip to the bathroom since the Detroit game in week 3. And this wasn't a terrible game. He had 8 straight games in the AB range. I mean, that's Yanda-esque. To go that long in the AB range. Mm-hmm. This game, he had a pressure and a half allowed. He had a 1/4 credit of that sack that I divided 4 ways. He went 2 for 4 on pulls. That included a penetration and a half penetration. They had another full penetration. So it wasn't certainly a bed of roses for him, and certainly an off game, but it's still a C minus as I scored it. So right at the bottom of the C range, still been playing pretty well. Honestly, still the glue that holds it together for the Ravens line right now. If it wasn't for him, doing some of the things with the line calls and working with Bozeman to keep things together, I don't think it'd be working at all.
Yeah, you could see him, setting the calls. You could see that on every play. I think the interior of the line is fine. It's not great. It's not, Cleveland or Dallas or I don't know who else has a great interior.
Cleveland's the good example.
Yeah. But they're not the problem. They're not prohibiting the offense from living up to their potential. It's really the tackles and Lamar and the play and the scheme, I think, combined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I think more than anything, it's probably tackle and the running back quality is the other thing for me. McCary, he battled against Watt for the first 37 snaps, and he got a big adjustment because he was facing Watt, which brings him from a D to a C. I still consider that pretty good against T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt against McCary is an enormous mismatch. If I knew I was going to get that kind of performance, I would have taken it off the bat, no problem. Mm-hmm. He gave up one pressure, parts of two sacks, a quarter and a half, so not the whole thing by any stretch. Put him in the C range. The injury, obviously, very concerning. He left the game immediately, came back in on the next series, and he was able to stay in for a little bit. I don't know if it was the whole series or even into the next series. I'll take a quick look at that. Yeah, he played actually two more series when he came back, and then he had to call it a night.
That was after the touchdown, right?
Yeah,
after the first touchdown.
So his injury came basically the play, two plays before the first touchdown.
Yeah,
and
right.
then after that, he played two more series. Mm-hmm. So Phillips played the last two of the touchdown drive. Yeah,
McCarty's he's a battler. He's a fighter. What he lacks in physical, you know, arm length and that sort of thing, I think he makes up with his feet a little bit. It's just a shame now that he's been battling injuries. He came back from that first injury sooner than I think anyone expected. Without McCary, where would they be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously it'd be a lot worse situation, and we're about to find out, yeah. I guess, is the answer. Where are we? Phillips was awful in relief of McCary, and that's one reason why I need to go to this next topic. He had one pressure, a quarterback hit, two sacks, and that's spread out over just 32 snaps. He did have two highlight blocks. I want to, you know, talk about when a bad player does some good things to make sure the balance is there. But Phillips did really have a couple of nice combination blocks that are worthwhile. I think, you know, that's the kind of thing that could help the team at guard maybe more than it does at tackle. Tackle, his feet just need to be quicker than they are. His feet and his arms don't work too well together, and he definitely does not use his length effectively the way Orlando Brown could, even with, you know, moderately slow feet.
Yeah, completely agree. Phillips isn't a tackle. You know, I think that's been well established the last two seasons. Unfortunately, that's what they were comfortable with, and it's confusing to me how they did not draft a tackle or find another tackle or keep a tackle that they had in camp around. They were aware, obviously everybody knows the story now, they took Ben Mason because Reichardt had surgery. Well, Ronnie Stanley had two surgeries, you know, and you need three tackles. That has bitten this franchise in the butt on several different years, and that's a position you can find a fullback if you need one. You can't find a tackle.
I mean, if they had two other fifth-round picks, you know, they drafted Tylan Wallace, right, at the beginning of the fifth round. They drafted,
I think it was fourth. Wasn't Wade the fifth?
Wade was definitely in the fifth, but was there another fifth, like a three fives?
I don't recall.
Well, point being, and there might have been two fours and two fives. But in any case, here's the point. If whatever players you, whatever picks you had, I mean, Wallace was not a must have position. It wasn't a big need pick. It was a hope he has an upside pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, it's a good gamble. I don't think the Ravens have lost it yet. We'll see. You know, he seems to be a pretty good special teams player. Frankly, he's not Miles Boykin, I don't think, is a special teams player. So, you know, you have some questions there, but you do have, you know, you have a reset on the clock to year one of the contract with Wallace. So there's some value there. I think they're going to face a lot of criticism for this in the coming time. The reset of the pick on Wade is a nice thing to get in a way, but it didn't help them this year. And right. I know you're a big this year guy.
I think I'm not necessarily a big this year guy. I just think sometimes they get carried away with the BPA and carried away with assets for the future over maximizing your opportunity when you have it sometimes. And it's their top franchise, the top 2-3 franchise, the way they do business. But I wish they would recalibrate part of that strategy sometimes. I think they would have better success.
Okay. Let me ask you, the first question I'm going to ask you, and I apologize if this seems antagonistic, but are you okay. a season ticket holder?
Excuse me?
Are you a season ticket holder?
I used to be. Okay. 2 years ago I was.
Okay. So I'll just say this. As a season ticket holder, I really value the way the Ravens run their organization. Mm-hmm. I want to be going to the games every Sunday. I want them to mean something, even if it means the difference between the 6th seed and the 8th seed and out in the AFC. All right. I don't want to be told, hey, we're having a rebuilding year. Well, why the hell am I buying tickets then? You know, kind of thing. You know, what am I going to do with my tickets if that happens? I want to have consistently good football. I grew up with the Baltimore Orioles. You know, that's the Orioles of 68 to 85 had 18 straight winning seasons, and they didn't win every year, but they certainly won enough to justify their mode of operation, including after free agency derailed, you know, what they could do as an organization to hoard the talent they had. I just don't like it. And I think, you know, Voss, as much I've had you on the show a number of times, and you're one of my favorite guests, by the way, absolutely without question. But when we had this discussion, you know, there have been other times where we've wanted to make a move for this year. But the problem is you don't know what year is going to be the year because injuries have such a determination of it. Sure. So I say, you know, play it out, see what happens, and do your best to manage and, you know, year after year at a relatively level, stable level.
I have a couple counters to that. First, I think it's a different sport than baseball. And I think when you have other teams that are going all in, quote unquote, mm-hmm. if the other teams just take turns doing that and you're always just a half step behind them, that's problematic. I also think it's not necessarily that go all in this year or last year or the year before. I mean, when you're missing a legitimate piece that you need, that is probably going to prevent you from making that run. But more, it was the issue I take is the last 2-3 years of the Flacco era where they were, I felt the ceiling was the wild card and they were backloading and restructuring and going all in, quote unquote, maximizing for the wild card if they would have taken a little bit of a reset. And, you know, Ozzie, after the first Super Bowl, he tried to keep it all together. And then Leon Searcy got hurt, Jamal got hurt, and then they had to blow it up. But then I think they cut 9 starters. But the next year, they had a few young guys, and they made the wild card, I think, 2 years after. And it didn't take a long time to rebuild. And then after the second one, they said, we are going to rebuild. But they brought in, instead of saying, well, let's save some cap space, they brought in a bunch of guys and ate up cap space, and they were just a lot of average players that didn't necessarily amount to much in the end.
What year are we talking about? This is the
13.
End of okay.
No, right. 13. And then they had a decent year in 14, but then, like, Doomerville, the year – they make cap casualties sometimes, and then I'm not exactly sure why they do it, but I think that strategically it could be done a little bit better.
Okay. The one contract I'm going to disagree on is the Flacco contract, because there's just no way out of that contract. They did keep backloading it additionally. They could have drafted earlier for a quarterback. Honestly, based on what they have, I don't know how it could have worked out better. I mean, literally, the transition of franchise quarterbacks being as smooth as it was with a limited amount of truly non-competitive years that the Ravens had during 13 through 17. You know, it's a 5-year period. They made the playoffs once and they were a legitimate Super Bowl contender that year, despite a bad secondary. They almost beat the Patriots. They almost went to the AFC Championship game.
Right.
They had a real chance to win it. They were that close, and Deflategate and other factors came together and they lost. The 2013 team was not good. I mean, that team had a lot of problems. The 2015 team, all kinds of injuries like this year. I don't know that there's anything you can really do about that. And then the 16 and 17 teams, I'll let you respond in just a second. The 16 and 17 teams both were near misses on the playoffs. 16 team, probably some game management issues that's led to actually Harbaugh getting better as a game manager in that Christmas night game. and then the 17 team losing on the touchdown to Boyd.
So I guess I'm saying the 13 year, why bring in Marcus Spears and Chris Canty and, you know, spend $15 million in cap space on $2 million other guys when you don't really have that ceiling? But also with the Flacco contract, they gave him the extension after he had a negative interception to touchdown ratio and tore his ACL that year. So they gave it to him after that. So I would have said, let him play that year out. And then let's see where you are in 2 years instead of pushing that cap money down the road. And I mean, they've restructured Brandon Williams, I think five times. So that's why you now have an aging defensive tackle that you can't get out of the contract the last couple of years.
Well, I mean, he'll be gone after this year, and he just had the best game of the season. But yeah, I agree. The thing to do, to be non-revisionist about it, is to go back and look at each point the Flacco contract was extended, and just look at the team's circumstances at that point and say, why did they do it? And if they can come up with a good explanation of why they thought they were contenders then and they weren't, then I'm pretty much okay with it. But basically, as a season ticket holder, I want to go to Section 153 week after week, and I want to be there for competitive football. I don't want to be there for a rebuilding year that's designated specifically in that way. I really don't want to go through a period where, like the Steelers are about to go through, where they don't know how long it'll be until they have the next franchise quarterback. That's a scary proposition. And the Ravens are going to, we're going to be in a position here, Voss, where they're going to tie up a lot of money with Lamar Jackson one way or the other. They're going to do it. I mean,
yeah, sure.
Yeah. And once they do that, you know, that really is going to limit what they do otherwise. And then you can really come to appreciate at that point the Ravens' ability to draft, the Ravens' ability to hoard picks and whatnot, because that's central in terms of reloading talent when you really don't have any money to spend on free agency.
Yeah, I certainly respect that view. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think that if they could, I don't think they would fall off the cliff if they change their philosophy, recalibrated by 10% or 15%, because they still have these institutional structures in place. And I have a slightly different view on the best way to maximize, because I personally prefer a top-heavy roster, because I think if you have injuries, whether you're deep or not, if your top players go down, you're in trouble either way.
Okay. All right. I respect the opinion. I even more enjoy having the conversation with you, Voss.
Absolutely. So
let's move on and get to the other topic because they're out of offensive tackles. Okay. There's literally no one. If you look at I'm going to bring up the Ravens practice squad guys by now, but Oboihe got cut. And I mean, he was a guy the Ravens hoped would be by the way, did they make a roster move today? Did they pick up Ryan Poole? I didn't notice.
I haven't looked this evening. I haven't seen anything around 4 or so.
Okay, so I was really hoping they would get to that. He was available and he's not protected on Tuesday. So if they didn't do it by 4 p.m., then he might be protected by the Indianapolis. He could have been elevated too, but the Ravens would have had a shot to get him today, presumably. So let's see. In terms of offensive tackles, they still have Jared Jones-Smith on the practice squad. They have David Sharp still down there, and he's been up for – he saw some action, didn't he? Wasn't he active as a practice squad elevation at least once?
Yes. It's been a long season. It was about a month ago, I think.
Right. So they went from having about 5 or 6 guys that could play offensive tackle – on the practice squad to down to 2 now again. So everybody's either been elevated, released, you know, they've made their peace with who they had, which means they probably were bringing in a lot of guys hoping that somebody would be the piece of spaghetti that sticks on the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem to have really happened here. I think they actually probably need to look at their roster right now and seriously consider moving Ben Cleveland to tackle. At this point, he's the only lineman who might be good who's not playing right now. Maybe Cologne you could put in that category too, but he's certainly not going to play tackle.
No, Cologne can't play tackle. It'd be worth a shot, I think, it depending how healthy Cleveland is. He has the length, maybe not the foot speed, but clearly right. Phillips doesn't either. So I don't see why not. Let me ask you a question, Ken. Do you think the scheme is harder for street acquisitions to pick up quickly than other places?
It's a good question. There are elements of it that are difficult for a right tackle like the counter plays, but I would have said when they ran out of pistol, it's an easier system for all linemen and certainly for the right tackle in particular, because their offense is right-handed, generally speaking, and they're doing most of their pistol reads looking right with Lamar and allowing an unblocked defender to come in on that side, which means the only responsibility for the right tackle is down block on the guard's guy, that defensive tackle, move up half a level to level two, hit the scraping linebacker. Lamar's responsible on those edge runs. Frankly, I don't know why they haven't gone back to more of the pistol. They went back last week. They went to a little bit of pistol and a little bit of sidecar. And then this week, not as much again. So I want to see more where Lamar is really the edge threat on read plays out of pistol, as opposed to just handing the ball off out of pistol.
I agree, because that's what, you know, they say that the fronts aren't respecting the edge. So who's going to be, who's going to force them to respect it more than Lamar?
Right. All right, well, there you go. Okay. So we talked a little bit about Oboihe being gone, about who, we had cover all that. I think so. So the other skill position players, let's talk about them. There's not a lot to talk about from this game, I don't think, but we pick a player you'd like to talk about, Voss, and we'll talk about them and we'll alternate.
I think Hollywood had a good game. He had that nice curl route on the final drive for the 22-yard pickup. He also had that 17-yard catch down the right sideline on 3rd and 8 where he got down real low and got his hands underneath the ball. And also the defensive pass interference he drew on Fitzpatrick. If Lamar let him, that's a touchdown. So I thought Hollywood was the best of the receivers, at least.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he looked good. He's getting the most snaps of anybody by far. His yards per target was still not great if you don't include that pass interference drawn. But with the pass interference drawn, they're back in line and quite good. So I'm obviously fine with what he did during the game. Maybe I'll talk about Bateman a little bit. And I know there's been some jawboning today on Twitter that I've noticed anyway of Bateman being upset with his amount of playing time. And he got 33 snaps in this game. Watkins got 34. Duvernay got 44. Brown got 64. I mean, they played a lot more wide receiver snaps this game, by the way.
Yeah.
And Prochet 6 snaps and Wallace 1. So everybody got time who was in at wide receiver. I don't know why Bateman would be super upset about getting 45% of the snaps. I guess I can understand why he'd want to get more targets because he got one target and he didn't catch it. But on the other hand, there's going to be games like that. And, you know, Harbaugh talked about it today. They're not going to chase targets for a particular player. Maybe it was yesterday you know, that's not what the game's about. The game's about finding open opportunities and whatnot. I think Bateman had Lamar's trust, so I don't know why he wouldn't be getting some targets if he's relatively open.
I didn't notice him being open very much in this game. He also had a false start penalty, and then his target, he dropped. It bounced off his hands. Right. So I guess it's the rookie curve a little bit. I think he's with Watkins back in the fold. He's not getting quite as much opportunity. I have a lot more sympathy or at least understanding for if there really is discontent after a loss as opposed to a win, because you certainly don't want to be whining after a win. But it's, you know, he's a rookie. He missed the beginning of the season, and it's a learning curve.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And he's up there in the team, near the team lead in drops. I think he would be higher on a per target basis than most of the other big guys. Sammy Watkins had some problems with drops too this year, though, so maybe that's not true. I'm trying to kind of go back in my head over who's had.
They take turns. Everybody has a bad game.
Yeah, there you go. Andrews has had some drops. Andrews, you know, he had the 5 interceptions the last 2 games, I guess it was, or the 4 interception game and the 1 interception game. All 5 of those were targets of Mark Andrews.
Yeah, so. And he dropped 2 balls in the first quarter, and the 2-point attempt touched his fingertips. So,
yeah, I don't really blame that one on Andrews. I like Andrews falling on the sword for that. That's leadership right there. I'm happy he did that. But yeah. Devonta Freeman, how about we talk about him? Because he played reasonably well, I think, given the circumstances he's been tossed in.
Sure. Broke four tackles on his 18-yard catch, check down. Also had an 18-yard run on a counter. I thought he ran hard. I thought he looked pretty spry. His jump cuts are very, very sharp. And I thought this was I think this was his best game as a Raven.
Yeah, I agree. I think he improved. He's been certainly getting a higher percentage of these snaps his last 5 weeks or so, and deservedly so. He's been doing things to earn them. He's been very useful as a receiving back, which right away that's going to put you in a great spot to pick up snaps in obvious receiving situations. But more than that, he hasn't proven to be an absolute zero as a runner the way Murray has. And so it's getting tougher and tougher for them to figure out where do we actually want Murray in the game. And, they got him in for 15, 18 snaps, whatever it was in this game. But to get him as a pass blocker, maybe that's what you do because he has two receptions in this game. But otherwise, I'm not sure what you do. Maybe he becomes your second down back if you want to get Freeman in there for first and third down. I don't know what you do.
I think pass protection, Murray is strong, and he did show some elusiveness after the catch here, so just build on that. Just to go back to Andrews real quick, because I thought he had a good game despite some, but on two different occasions, he put his head down and plowed through to pick up a tough first down.
Yes.
And that was very, very good.
Yeah, very, very happy with him after the catch recently, and his on-field awareness is very high in terms of where those markers is. We've got the yellow line. Of course, that's not what it looks like on the field, and you wonder sometimes how are the players so good at figuring out exactly what they need in terms of the line to gain. But they must have mechanisms for knowing that are on the field that they say, okay, I need to make it to the 41.2 or something, and they're able to calibrate that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. I want to talk about Devin Duvernay because, you mentioned the orbit motion that he'd been used in. I thought that was a positive additional wrinkle. We'd seen some of that from Hollywood, but Duvernay is a good speed option on the outside that still allows you to run a vertical with Hollywood on that same play. And I think it gives the Ravens more options. I still wish they would use him out of the backfield more. And this might end some of the receiving quandaries. It probably wouldn't, but if they put him in the backfield – I said 10 when I was on the lounge, but I want to say 4 times per game, 5 times per game. Some amount that shows the other team that they're serious about using it, where they actually hand him the ball and go to the mesh and show that Lamar can either pull it or he can hand it off in the mesh. If they showed that to other defensive coordinators, it would force some degree of respect.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think everyone that covers the Ravens, follows the Ravens, is in agreement with that, except for Greg Roman. Duvernay, I remember pre-draft, he's built like a running back, That was the first line of his profile. And I did think it was interesting that he had more snaps than both Bateman and Sammy this week. But he's a versatile piece. He seems to just be a spark. He gets first down every time he has the ball in his hand. He had a nice game returning as a return man this week too, I thought.
Right. Okay, well, we're not going to name MVPs after a loss. Did you have anybody else you want to talk about before we move on?
Just Reichard. I thought he did really well to get that drive started, that 99-yard drive with that 9-yard catch and bulldoze, whatever you want to call it. Had some nice blocks, had a nice second-level block with Freeman's touchdown. I'd like to see him more involved. That Tennessee playoff game we saw, once they started getting him involved, all of a sudden they put a nice drive together. So I think he's part of the way to unlock what the defenses are throwing at them now.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it would really help. And, there's things he can do as a chipper and a release that you can still get off in time on the edge of a situation like that. So if not if you're overloaded, but if you've got your unoverloaded side and he's making a block to make it unoverloaded on that side, you can get him out. And he's very dangerous when he gets out there, if it's all small players in the defensive backfield at that point.
Certainly.
All right, let's go to the mailbag if we can. We've got a lot of good questions out there. I think you've had a head start on me in kind of getting a look at this. We'll just go, if you want to pick one, I'll pick one too, and then we'll just alternate until we think we've exhausted it pretty much. I'm going to work from the bottom here, so you might want to work from the top.
Okay. Do you want me to go first?
Sure, if you want.
This is from James Lorman. Why wasn't Lamar throwing to his receivers until the final drive of the game? Were they not open? Was it the play calling? He seems gun-shy when not throwing to Andrews.
You want to take a shot at it first? Yeah. I'd say if you look at the targets for the game, I think the receivers got a fair number of targets, particularly Brown. Bateman obviously didn't. But Watkins got 6 targets. Duvernay probably was not utilized as much, and obviously Bateman was not utilized as much as we might have hoped. But part of it also is if you're doing any kind of a route that takes time to develop, if the blitz is getting there quickly, it's going to make it very difficult for those to happen. The other thing about this is that the Ravens had fewer extended play opportunities in this game, meaning fire opportunities where he leaves the pocket and the play's getting extended 3, 4, 5 seconds where there's a chance for some receiver to make space on the field. And he often does look for Andrews. It's true in those situations, or sometimes Brown. But those are opportunities also for a player like Bateman or Duvernay to earn the trust of Lamar by being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I completely agree. You have to take what the defense was giving you. I think they had some nice checkdowns. When the defense is sending numbers, you have to look underneath sometimes. And there was a couple different plays where Lamar was flushed out of the pocket and couldn't quite make that extra step to buy enough time to find somebody downfield.
All right, got a question here from Minion Hunter. And he says, what do you make of the Bateman agent switch? Just coincident, or is he pissed at not being used and wants out? He's a first-round pick. He got injured, and Ravens are full of injuries. He's not being targeted. His snaps are dropping. There's a whole lot of statements in there, and I think most of them are true, but some of them are not. And Bateman still got 45% of the snaps. You're right, he's not in the 60s anymore. But there's also been some healthier receivers, like Watkins is back now, so you would expect his snaps to drop some, that he wouldn't be on the field all the time, and he'd have to lose some snaps to returning receivers. One of the problems is his hands have just been not secure this year. That's probably cost him some targets. I think, he'll regain that trust with Lamar, and hopefully he'll take every opportunity to practice with Lamar this offseason the way Hollywood naturally will as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to speculate on the agent change or anything. Obviously, we don't know about that. But what was the other part of the question?
There was a whole lot of it. Just coincidence, or is he pissed at wants out? So I don't think you want to answer that. He's a first-round pick, got injured, and Ravens full of injuries. He's not being targeted, and his snaps are dropping. I mean, part of the problem is that they've had some wide receivers that have come back, and a lot of his opportunity came when Watkins, for example, was out.
Right. Yeah. And he's a rookie, it's a dangerous precedent to now start Hayden Hurst wants a trade, Orlando Brown wants a trade, Rashad Raymond wants a trade. I mean, that's not the way you run a team.
Yep. Okay, good point. You got another one ready?
Yeah, Connor Kellerstrass. What are your thoughts on the offense going up-tempo more often / sooner to also help negate opposing pass rush?
I mean, I personally would love to see that. It's the kind of thing where I think the defense in particular, the last couple games before this was dominating snap count by 20 plus per game. That's, you can take a chance at some point during a game to go up tempo to see if you can fix the offense. Because it was a weird case. Both of those games, they had 3.9 yards per offensive play, and yet they won the snap count by 20. So what the hell's going on here, first of all? But second of all, that's the kind of game where if your defense hasn't been overly taxed in terms of snap count, that's a good game to try no huddle, risk a 3-and-out, see if you can get some big play mojo started out of it, and see if you can freaking get some fear in opposing defenses and not just let them, ignore your running backs, just erase him from their visual picture of the field and just key on Lamar.
Exactly. It's really become a stick-to-stick offense. They had only had 2 plays of more than 20 yards in this game, and I think tempo would be great. It neutral. Obviously, those pass rushers get tired coming with a full head of steam snap after snap, and you see a lot of offenses do that. successfully in other teams around the league. So I completely co-sign. Would like to see more of that.
Yeah, when they've done it this year, they've been very good. So they've always been good at the end of halves the last several years. So that's never been a problem. But they've been good at the end of games when they've had to come back. You look at the Colts game. You look at this game. Even look at the game with Huntley against the Bears. I mean, the Ravens have been able to do things effectively to move the football when the other team has to huff and puff and get back to the line of scrimmage and start to rush the passer again. It's usually a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, I got another one. Mark Blue says, who replaces McCary and what's the deal with Ben Cleveland? I wish I knew what the deal was with Ben Cleveland. I think, Voss, you're probably correct to speculate that he might not be completely healed. So he's healthy enough to be OL8 right now, but he's not healthy enough to start somewhere on the line where he could really help the Ravens.
Yeah, we'll see what it looks like next week. Certainly opportunity to make a change there. This comes from Aiden Bradley. Good question, I think. Why didn't the Ravens run more plays away from TJ Watt? On the two-point conversion, he rushed Lamar completely unblocked, hence missing the throw. How would you draw this play to neutralize that?
You want to go first?
I think it could slide protection. They had five offensive linemen blocking three defensive linemen at the end of the play, and four of the offensive linemen ended up on the ground. But also, I think the idea that, he's the best pass rusher, you got to cover him all the time. Sometimes that's not schematically the best way. Sometimes it's better to leave that guy unblocked because they're not necessarily going to be able to block him anyway and let Lamar key off of him and see what he can do from there.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought that Lamar probably moved up in the pocket and then he pump faked that kind of messed the timing of the play up. So he had a chance to get wide of that play and still have time to make that play to Andrews, where Watt would not have been in line to knock that ball down. I think Watt would have had to come after Lamar or at least go to Lamar's outside hip to contain him if he'd started a move to the right. You know, because obviously, you know, TJ Watt's, he's a great football player, but there's nothing that makes him into rubber man that would suddenly be able to make him be able to knock down a pass when Lamar is able to move his feet a little bit and adjust the throwing lane. So it was a shame. It didn't work out. I really liked the decision to go for two. We haven't talked about that yet. I don't know if that's in the question here. Is we're talking about the two-point conversion
let's go to it. Yeah.
Yeah. But how did you feel about it?
I thought it was the perfect – I completely agreed with it before I knew Marlon Humphrey was hurt. I thought you had him pinned back. You had him on your heels. You've been riding Lady Luck throughout the whole season, and you're on the road. And I thought that was – I completely agree with the decision to go for it.
Okay, I agree with the decision too. I was on with Jerry Coleman, and he said, well, the Ravens have only made – 2 out of 6 this year and 3 out of 10 during the Lamar era. And I think if you really believe that sample, which I do not believe that that's representative of what Lamar's actual percentage is to convert this, then if it was 30%, then you probably would say, no, I wouldn't do it. But if you're really talking about how high did that chance have to be, I think it only had to be in the low 40s. Cause I think that was about the Ravens' chance to win the game in overtime. Under the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And there are two major considerations. One is the kicker, honestly, is a consideration, but it's first possession that is the really big question. So if there's two cases. If you lose the toss and Pittsburgh gets the ball first, they've scored 3 straight drives. You haven't been able to stop them. Your defense is tired. And I think you'd had a hard time keeping them out of the end zone or at least even keeping them from getting a field goal. Mm-hmm. The other part of that is that if you win the toss, you might score a touchdown. The Ravens did that to win against the Colts, and they just had some consecutive plays, so maybe they could build off that and get another drive going. But if you don't score, or if you kick a field goal even more seriously, you give Roethlisberger a 4-down football opportunity. And their offense against our set of corners, I think that would have been a lot worse outcome for the Ravens. I think they'd be able to move the ball down the field consistently and easily with – quick passes and the set of corners the Ravens would have to put out there, because it might have been Stevens in the slot and Jimmy Smith and Averett on the outside. If they put a third receiver on the field, you know, consistently, you know, the tight end all of a sudden becomes a big mismatch for a linebacker or a safety. I mean, just a lot of things can go wrong. You know, the Ravens already proved their inability to be effective with numbers on the blitz. So I think that they'd have been severely disadvantaged in a four down football situation against Roethlisberger, which is why I think you can justify a very low break even percentage on the 2-point conversion.
Agreed. Last time, Justin Tucker missed one against New Orleans 2 years ago in that same situation. So nothing's automatic.
There you go. Good point. All right, Voss, love doing this show with you, man. Many times as we could have you, we'll do it. I know you're a busy man now. Your child situation?
I have two children.
Okay.
Eight and six.
Any new ones on the way?
No, we're finished.
Don't know who I'm confusing you with, but I apologize for that. And if there's, yeah, well, we don't need to go into that way because it would not be funny to your wife if we said
that. I don't know where you were going, but it made me laugh.
It would have been, there's nowhere good it could have gone. It's one of these questions. So, It's you know, one of the things you can never win at. We had you know, a meeting of the officers around the table one time, and there's a picture of the head of IT being passed around, and she had brought it. And our president had a question about it, and he started asking, and he goes, no, I won't do that. And I go, yeah, there's no place good that any question about a 25-year-old picture of your head of IT can go. There's nowhere good. So we got to be careful about these things. Anyway, Voss, really appreciate you coming on the show. Other people, if you want to do a 25-year, I'm sorry. First of all, where can they find your stuff?
The co-managing editor of Baltimore Beatdown, a Baltimore Ravens blog with SB Nation. And you can find me on Twitter at Vasilis Beatdown, Vasilis Beatdown.
All right. Outstanding, Voss. Really good guy to banter with. So make sure you give him a follow on Twitter. For other folks out there, if you want to do a 25 years episode, I'm still looking for about three. These are the last ones I have time for. It got great ideas, great response all season. I really appreciate everyone jumping in on this. We're still like 3 weeks ahead in terms of ones in the bag. So we're basically right down to the last couple here that have to be recorded. But send me a quick DM on Twitter. Want a narrowly focused idea that we can go deep on in about 20 or 25 minutes. Love to have you on for something like that. Voss, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure. Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.